It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, as I was telling William, so I just came back a couple days ago from Wisconsin, and apparently I'm not allergic to things in Wisconsin, even at this terrible time of year. Because I did great there, but I came back, and now my face is full of a variety of seasonal fluids. Because August, September, October tends to be really bad for allergies. So this is why I look and sound like this. It also means William is going to largely have to carry the episode. So strap in.
You often say that, and then it just does not happen like that.
I'm hoping someday. Yeah, you gotta leave the nest sometime. I'm really just okay. A few more years, I'm gonna be like, William, the podcast is 18 now, legally an adult. You gotta move out.
Not to say they aren't podcasts where I do a lot of talking, but that doesn't mean I'm carrying it.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world, I'm pretty sure, that will use the word snot that early in the episode.
Right up front.
Yeah, just wanted to get that. That's what this whole thing is. For those of you just joining us, this is not the place for you. I mean, you seem like a good kid. Maybe go to a different episode. You know? Look, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and look for the ones that have a lot of comments. Those were probably interesting. You know how, like, old people don't understand meme culture, and then the kids will be like, well, Grandpa, here's the thing, and they show the meme, and they're like, I still don't get it. This episode is that meme. Like, if somebody brought you here and this is your first time at the podcast and you watch this first, you're gonna finish and be like, yeah, I still don't get it. What were you, why you like this, what is happening? So don't do that. I'm Tony
and I'm William, and this is episode 603.
And it has been 2 weeks for us. Or, depending on how you look at it, one day, because we got together, not at IHOP. And yeah. William ate a great deal of fried food.
Yep. First time in a long time.
I took William to Shakespeare's, which is my neighborhood bar and grill and a longstanding institution, I think, within Iowa City. And it's just a place that I really like. I periodically have lunch with one of our listeners, and she and I usually go there, and Trish and I go there. It's a nice place. And I thought, why haven't I shared this with William? And so then I did, and William had never been. And William, who in my head I think of as like a healthy eater, comparatively, you know, because he's worried about all the, you know, soy is an issue. Like, that's, to me, that's only a really healthy eater even thinks that far ahead. And he ordered a little thing you could get where you could just get three half baskets of the various bar food appetizers. And yep. So he chose onion rings and tots and jalapeno poppers. And so that was William's lunch. was a pretty decent sized basket of all fully deep fried onion rings, tots, and jalapeno poppers.
That was good.
And I said to him, I said, you're going to have some issues later. And he said, no, I don't think so, because I don't eat this much fried food very often. And I was like, yes, William, that's why you're going to have issues later.
Which I haven't had any issues, so.
Wait for it. It was just, and I had a tuna melt for the first time ever.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even ask you how you liked your first ever tuna melt.
I think it was probably a very good tuna melt. I don't get it. I'm not into it. Here's the thing. All the individual ingredients I enjoy. I like tuna salad. I like cheese. I like bread. It didn't work for me. I don't think the cheese and the tuna salad go together particularly well. The warmth of it, warm tuna salad is not apparently my jam.
Oh.
But all the things involved, it was a very good tuna salad. And I think I would rather have a cold tuna salad sandwich and some cheese, or, you know, a grilled cheese and a cup of tuna salad, or, you know, something like that. Gotcha. I like all the bits, but I don't think they go together for me. You know, I think talking about it with you yesterday gave me sort of vent on this, so I don't have to address this as much today. But I did want to mention, for any of you who are actively involved in the world of the Try Guys online, which might just be me, I watch a lot of their videos. They made national news because one of their members had a romantic involvement with one of the employees of the company. The Try Guys own their own company, and word got out, and now it's an issue, and that gentleman is no longer a Try Guy. And the experience of this has been really interesting for me to see how I respond, because I'm very much in a sort of parasocial relationship with them. And also because the remaining Try Guys have handled this better than I would have expected any YouTubers to handle this. And if you know what's going on, then you probably already know what's going on. If not, and you're just interested in this kind of thing, on the Try Guys YouTube channel, there is, I think, a less than 6 minute video that says, here's what happened. And it's the three of them giving a statement. And I think it makes me very hopeful for future generations, because I think they are handling this as well as they can. And the whole thing's just very weird for me. So yeah, I'm very interested academically, I guess. But so I just wanted to mention that. And that's been going through my head a lot. How's your 2 weeks?
fine, you know. I'm working really hard not to do things.
Yeah.
School which technically didn't
work, because I've seen some very exciting photos of you on farm equipment with small children.
Well, that's not the same as doing things. I mean, like, you know, that would be almost academic and school oriented, like just not do that for a while. So there are a lot of things I've been sort of trying to avoid. School classes officially start on Monday, but they open up the online course room tomorrow, which means if you want, you can get started early, which I will do, because my brother's going to be in town. My brother from Alaska is going to be in town.
Ooh, cool.
Next week and over that weekend. And I don't know. I mean, I might be able to go over there on a Saturday and that's it. I might be able to go over. I mean, I don't know what the arrangement's going to be, but I'd like to be a little ahead of school so I have some options. Well, I don't know what's going to happen. there was the idea that we would go out to Tennessee while he was here. because if you recall, that's where the rights are from. My rights, anyway. I mean, the first right to come to the States from Northern Ireland settled in East Tennessee, and there were several generations of rights until my great-great-grandfather moved to Dallas Township in Marion County, which is just south of Melcher. And the farm I grew up in was like north and west of Melcher. But so I've been out to Tennessee a number of times to do genealogical research and whatnot, but Roger's never been out there. That's my brother from Alaska, Roger. He's never been out there. And I'm not sure if, I don't think my brother Scott, my oldest brother, who I did the podcast with some time ago, I don't think he's been out there either. So we thought, well, we'll go out there. And actually there's a site where my grandfather and great-grandfather, where there's the remains of a cabin where they were both born. We were going to see it, take a look at it, maybe look around, you know, around the ruins to see maybe we find anything. I don't know. We just was just going to go see it because we.
In my family, they just point to a building and they say those office buildings used to be the maternity ward of St. Vincent's, and you and your sister and I were all delivered in the same room. It's probably an office now.
Well,
that's, you know, our version.
Most of the things. You know, a lot of things from my history are gone. Like, you know, the two homes that I grew up in, there are three homes I grew up in. One's in Pleasantville, Iowa, which is still there, but I don't remember it because I was only there for like 2 months or something. The two homes I remember growing up in are both gone. You know, the building,
this cabin is still there.
No, it's mostly in ruins. I mean, it's there, but yeah, it's not. It's mostly in ruins. You know, and the building that the sociology department was in when I was at the University of Iowa is also gone.
What did you do?
I didn't do anything, but it's gone. And that's especially sad because that building actually played a part in Abby's history in a couple ways. One, that building used to be the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, basically. And that's where
she was born in there.
Her grandmother was born in there.
Oh, my goodness.
Then later, when it was not the hospital anymore, but it was the journalism department.
Her great-grandmother was born in there.
Her grandfather went to attended classes there the before he met her grandmother and they got married. So he didn't, I don't think he even ever knew that the building that he attended his journalism classes in were some of those, was the building that his future wife, which I'm not sure he'd even met yet, was born in.
Was born in. That feels creepy to me. Like, I don't, is that, it's perfectly innocent, but it feels weird.
But then eventually I went to school and attended classes in that same building as a sociology major, and then eventually married their granddaughter. So this building had a lot of, you know, significance. And one day I go into Iowa City, and it's just not there. I thought, what happened? And I found out.
They all found out, and they were like, this feels weird, right? I can't explain it. Let's just get rid of the building, and then we don't have to address it anymore. Nobody has to, because we're all agreed. We all feel that, right? Something in our gut clenches when we hear the story. It doesn't seem wholesome.
The elementary school I went to is gone. The high school I went to is gone. You know, new things are put in their place, but
all those things. When we were in Astoria, anytime we passed through Astoria, we had to stop by the brick hospital where he was born and see the plaque that had turned it into an official historical landmark. Which it was, and we always thought that was hilarious.
I mean, it's kind of, it seems remarkable to me, like the houses I grew up in, the schools I went to, and, you know, the building that I took most of my classes in the university, all those places are gone. I think it's kind of unusual for a person who, like a 53-year-old today, most of the places they lived in or went to school in are still there, but not me.
I do feel like, the universe might be trying to clean up any sign. They're like, you know,
I think too.
Once we're done with this, let's never speak of this again.
Anyway, so we were going to go to Tennessee and we were going to see the places that my ancestors, you know, whatever. But it turns out.
You're not allowed in Tennessee.
It turns out we're not allowed on the property where this, the ruins of this cabin are.
What did you do?
I didn't do anything. But they won't let us see it. The people who own it or whatever. So that was kind of the big draw. I mean, the Roger's been home lots of times and we haven't thought, hey, let's go to Tennessee and just go to the cemetery and go to the old homestead and go to, the big draw, the thing that really made my dad think we should do this is this site that we could actually kind of look at and examine and maybe see if we could find anything. I don't know, just whatever. And I've never seen it. So all of us going would be really cool. But since we can't go, it's like, well, you know, what are we going to go? You know, are we going to take Roger 12 hours east to see a cemetery? I mean, that, you know, probably not.
Get so that's barbecue. Probably, I mean,
that's probably not going to happen now, that big trip. Or even if dad decides to, like, let's say Roger, well, yeah, I want to go see the hills and see the homestead and stuff. I don't have to go. I've already been out there and, you know, a few of the other kids have too.
Yeah.
So one way or the other, that trip might not happen, but I do want to just, I want to get ahead on my studies so that, you know, if at the last minute I want to do, I can just say, well, I'll do this because I'm ahead, you know, I'm 2 weeks ahead or whatever.
Exactly. I feel like that's a thing that a lot of normal student people do.
Shut up.
Probably but, weird for you.
I feel like
British call a SWAT. I don't know exactly what it means, but that's what you are.
Okay. And I feel like I should say, I learned this week, and I told you already, that Jim McGregor, who used to be my boss when I worked for McGregor's Furniture.
Friend of the show.
Who we've Jim often McGregor. Talked about on the show, passed away in 2015 at the age of 53, the age I am now. And I did not know that happened. And I was very sad to hear it because, you know, we've told the joke about when you assume you make an ass out of you and Jim McGregor. I don't know what
and how you worked there and sold the chair to a dead guy, I believe.
Right. But I don't know if I ever talked much about him or, you know, said anything about him that was, you know, positive, negative, neutral, whatever. But I did like him quite a bit. He was a perfectly good person to work for. I had some pretty sort of serious conversations with him about, you know, what a person ought to do with their life, you know, because, you know, being Jim McGregor IV and McGregor's having been founded by the first Jim McGregor. Okay. And his dad was Jim McGregor III. You know, there was quite a bit of pressure there for him to, you know, just be the CEO for McGregor's or whatever, which he never was to my knowledge, but it was pretty clear to me that that's not what he wanted to do with his life. And, I remember one particular day we were in the warehouse that today is where Iowa River Landing is, or was where Iowa River Landing is today. And, and we were just kind of talking about that kind of stuff. And, I encouraged him to, you know, to, it's weird. Cause I remember saying something to the effect of, you know, life is short. Jim, you know, you don't know how long you've got, so you should do the thing that you believe in, that by the time that your life's over, you can look back and say, yeah, this was the right thing for me to do. And, you know, so it's really odd that his life actually was quite short. And I don't know why he died. I don't know, you know, he must have been sick or something. I mean, there was no, on all of his obituaries, they didn't say what the cause of death was. Now they said, they often said as for a memorial, you can donate to like this, like a cancer place. And I thought, oh, maybe he had cancer. But the fact of the matter is the obituary also mentioned that he was active in supporting cancer research and stuff for most of his life.
Okay.
So So maybe not. I don't know. But to my knowledge, there was nothing in the obituary that suggested he ever married. That there's not really a Jim McGregor, no Jim McGregor the Fifth. So, I mean, I don't. And they said some places he worked and some things he was doing, but it wasn't really clear to me, like, you know, when he left McGregor's, he stopped working there.
Oh, okay.
He did eventually do that. He was not working at McGregor's when he was 53. In fact, I think he left shortly after I did. And the obituary mentioned a few things that he'd done, but they didn't sound like this is my mission in life type of things. But you know, he was supporting various causes and things like that. So maybe that's what to him was important, was that kind of stuff.
Did some good.
Yeah. Which didn't surprise me at all, because he was a very good guy. You could tell there was just a lot of, you know, deep things going on there with him that he was dealing with. And so, you know, I just always thought, you know, one of these days I'm going to run into Jim and he'll tell me what he's been doing, and it'll be, you know, we'll have a good conversation or whatever and talk about the old times. So I was really stunned to find out, you know, that 7 years ago he passed.
Yeah.
And, but we have talked about him on here sometimes.
And at Applied, he has a legacy, maybe not specific what he wants, but
I do feel like if I told him that story, he would have thought it was funny. You know, the whole thing.
It is
like,
funny.
Because, you know, there was no chalkboard or whiteboard in our office. So he never did, you know, the whole thing about when you assume you make an ass out of you and me, it's kind of a visual gag, right? You need to be writing it down somewhere to show how that ass, the letter U and me, works. So I was just pretending like I'd never seen the visual gag. And if you've never seen the visual gag, with this guy comes in to your office and says this all the time, what's that going to sound like to you? Well, everybody else and Jim McGregor is an ass when you assume. So I think he would have thought that was pretty funny if I told him about it, but I never have a chance to. And it's sad. And you know, a lot of McGregor stores closed. They used to have like 5 or 6 in Iowa.
I didn't know any were still open.
Well,
they used to be all over the place. But
yeah, they started in Ottumwa, and there's still an Ottumwa store, but their headquarters has been in Marshalltown ever since they opened the Marshalltown store. I don't know why the headquarters moved to Marshalltown, and Marshalltown's where Jim was born and went to school and everything. The original Ottumwa store is still there. The headquarters Marshalltown store is still there, and there's a store in Waterloo, and that's all. They used to have a store, I think, in Fort Dodge. They had a store in Coralville, obviously. I mean, pretty much there was a time where everybody in Iowa was at least an hour away from a McGregor store. Now there's only 3 left. So, and his sister runs it. And she has, like, for a very long, like I said, I seem to recall knowing somehow when Jim left the company and when his sister took over. Because Jim's dad, who Jim looked just like his dad, is amazing. But his father died 2 years later. So elder Jim McGregor has also passed. So, but his sister Erin runs the place. And, you know, a tornado went through Marshalltown a few years ago and ruined the store, and they had to rebuild it and all this stuff. So, I figured I'd mention that. It's sad news. And I wish I'd known when it happened, because I would have gone to his funeral and stuff if I'd known. And his funeral was in Iowa City. Or they had a memorial in Iowa City. I think he also had a thing in Marshalltown, but I could have attended.
Well, presumably he's buried somewhere. You should make a pilgrimage.
Oh yeah, I'll have to look at the obituary and see, because
it's going to be in a relatively
sure. I mean,
it's going to be around here.
Yeah, probably around here. But even if it was in Marshalltown, and that's a pretty good drive. So what? I mean, I like Marshalltown's cool. I can go up there.
Marshalltown's like 1 hour and 20. You can cope.
Yeah. That's a good point. I don't know why I didn't think of that. I probably, because school's coming up, and all I can think of is how the next 10 weeks are going to be oppressive. But yeah, and you're right. I should think about doing that. Just paying my respects.
I take back everything I said about this not being a good entry episode. People are learning a lot about towns in Iowa that they have no reason to ever know about. And I take some weird smug comfort in, like, I know every town you're talking about, and I'm developing thoughts. I'm like, those are the only three left. Those are weird communities to be doing this in. Like, it's somehow sadder that that's where the three are.
Kind of. But, like, you're right. It kind of is.
Those are all sort of a little ghost towny at this point, anyway.
Yeah, Tumwa is actually not far from where I grew up.
And Atumwa is Village of the Damned, but you can't find the children. When I go to Atumwa, I keep expecting the children from Village of the Damned to come around the corner at any moment, and they never do. But that town feels like a horror movie is set there.
Yeah, spooky. But rest in peace, Jim.
Godfather's Pizza near the railway station, but that's about it.
R.I.P. to Jim, and I will continue to tell that joke, though, because I think it's
of course. Well, this is what I'm saying. I and others who were under you at Applied continue to tell that joke to other people. The legend lives the fuck on.
Oh, man.
I'm saying there is whatever else happened, Jim McGregor the Fourth has one solid legacy.
Yep. Don't assume. For Jim McGregor's sake, don't do it.
Yes.
But anyhow, so you told me about the Try Guy thing when we had
over lunch, fried food.
Lunch together, which was a very very good time. But we didn't talk very much. Well, when we talked about your trip to Wisconsin. Do you want to talk about that or?
Yeah, so me and Trish and Trish's youngest sister, Stephanie, we go on trips. The three of us are very close, and we go on trips sometimes. And they're often just trips. We rent a cabin somewhere and just hang out there out in the middle of nowhere. And we planned that again, and I decided to go for half a week because I love both of them, and I'm very close to both of them. They kind of sister up. When we're together, it's a thing I've seen before. When people are around their siblings, there's a little bit of a reverting of the relationship. And in any event, as much as I enjoy things, I do kind of feel like the third in that. So I was like, a whole week with them might be stressful for me. But staying home, I'm like, a whole week alone will definitely be stressful for me. So I sort of split the difference. So we went up there and met Steph at the cottage. And then I came back Tuesday night, and then Saturday I will meet them all in Peoria to see one of my nibblings in a play again, and we will transfer custody of Trish back to me, and I will bring her home.
The Satanic Cottage.
I have info on
this. Oh, okay.
So the cottage is gorgeous. It is in Wisconsin. It is on 240 acre farmland that is now essentially a nature refuge. And it's an amazing looking cottage. It's incredibly not functional. Like, there's just a lot jammed in there construction wise. There's a lot of beams that are like literally in front of the shower. You have to get out the front two thirds because the back two thirds has a cross beam like right out of the shower. But it is lovely, but I would hate to live there. And the big one that got me is all the bedrooms are upstairs, and the one bathroom is downstairs, and the stairs in between are wood, and they're the kind with no backs. And so there's a lot of creaking. And so anytime I had to get up to pee, it was a thing. But the most notable feature of this cottage is above the large bay window in the living room are three very clearly bespoke stained glass windows with figures in them.
Mm-hmm.
And the first figure appears to be a bunny person in light blue holding some sort of magical wand. The third person is the devil, but without horns, and has like a spear, but is like bright red and has a tail. And then the last one appears to be the Virgin Mary, but like she's all bundled up for some reason. The point is, we don't know what any of these windows are, and we think it might be a cult. Or at least
they are really weird looking.
We did until yesterday. Because I've asked many people, what the hell is this? And like, I don't know. And I told Trish and Steph, I was like, you need to contact them and ask them. This is going to drive me insane. Assuming you are not murdered while you're up here. I've seen this exact horror movie. But I'm talking to my sister yesterday, as I am wont to do on a Wednesday. And while I'm talking, I send her that picture. Yeah. And she's like, I know what these are.
What?
And I said, you do? Yeah. They are. Now, the problem is we don't know specifically, but they are religious figures from some polity in the Southwest. They are called Yay figures. And they might be Hopi. She doesn't think they're Navajo, but there's something associated with the various spiritual traditions in the Southwest of the United States, where she lived for a long time and studied and things like this. But she didn't know the specific ones. And so I thought this through, and I was like, oh, this is white people saw something cool when they were down there. And they're farmers, so they're probably snowbirds. I'm like, okay, these people probably own a lot of turquoise jewelry. It's that vibe, which is fine.
Okay.
But it very much the, here's some religious iconography that we're using for, I'm just going to guess, purely artistic purposes. From another, it's very, I've known these kind of white people, but so, yeah. It's like how people have throw pillows with Coco Pele on them. Like, that's weird, right? But
yeah. That's surprising to me because, I mean, you know, I obviously don't know every Southwestern native culture or anything, but boy, I didn't recognize
any. Yeah, she said they're called Yay figures, which she thinks is spelled Y-E-I. But she also specified she didn't know which specific ones they were.
Mm.
And we should also consider the fact that they were also not exactly drawn as you would normally see them. They were, in fact, pieced together in a very long, thin stained glass window.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you just glanced up at them, you might not even notice there's figures in there. It would just...
I did the first time, yeah.
Like a multicolored stained glass window. It's abstract almost even, but then if you look closer, it's like, well, I think those are legs. And that looks like a tail maybe, and that's a head.
That's a buddy.
But probably you could
horns, but in stained glass it looks like buddy.
So you could make out enough to think, well, that's definitely supposed to be something, a figure of some kind. But it wasn't that. It didn't jump right out at you at all. So I don't know.
Sorry, I got that allergic reaction thing where my soft palate is suddenly very itchy. So I apologize to people watching the video. And I'm all... I'm going to go to bed after this.
But you got some writing done when you were there.
I did. I got some progress done in the second Odd Wings book. And I figured out I was really stuck on the middle of this book, and I figured out what I'm going to do there, and I think it'll work. But yeah, I'm
outstanding.
Not super far in, but I did make some good progress there. Also finished the Becky Chambers novella I was reading, and then read the entirety of the next Discworld book, because I hadn't read one of those in a while. This one is called Eric, unless you are looking at it with the proper illustrations, and the title is in fact the name Faust crossed out and replaced with Eric. Because it's basically the story of Faust, but done Discworld style with a 14-year-old boy named Eric. So I read all of that, so that was nice. It was really gorgeous out there. Less light pollution, so you could really see some amazing starscapes at night.
Yeah.
We had a bonfire one night. It was nice. But yeah, that's pretty much what I've been doing. Why don't we read the email?
That's yeah, we can do that. Let's do it.
All right, you do it. I forgot to grab this thing.
I will do it. If I...
But read it right. Do the voices.
Do the voices. All right, the subject of this is a rabbi, a priest, and a bodhisattva walk into a bar.
I'm here for this. I'm absolutely here for this.
This is jazz, if that's...
Of course it is.
What other religion or religions besides your own do you know quite a bit about, and what aspects of them do you admire?
William's just like, I really hate all of them. They suck.
The problem with me when it comes to a question like this is there are very few religions I haven't, and I would say studied, I'd not just like gotten a casual look at, like I've read a book on it, or I've talked to a person who practices it or whatever, but I don't often remember a whole bunch of details about it. I mean, most of my interest is like form, like what kind of forms, what kind of, what kind of elements and principles are involved in this that are similar to other religions that I know about. So a lot of times the details get lost in me kind of trying to think about how human
what are you
religion
doing here?
Works.
What are you doing? Founding a cult is my thing. I do not want you. Stop biting my style. You're clearly headed to something here.
But it does mean, though, that for the religions that I've studied and looked at and you know, kind of explored, you know, kind of trying to understand what their roots, what their bones are, I guess, I admire all of them for everything. Usually the things that are different about them obviously really stand out and present a very interesting take on how the world works, you know, like Japanese spiritualism, for example, and the kami, and, you know, very interesting take on how the universe works, very interesting in how the people who believe in these spirits interact with their world and think about their world. And I can always see things about that worldview that enhances their day-to-day life, you know, that makes their experience interesting in a way that, you know, that's different from my own. And then I can appreciate someone growing up in that culture having that perspective. And it also, knowing their unique perspective that comes from their religious background or whatever, it helps me look at my life a little bit differently. I mean, even if I don't adopt that particular religious perspective or belief, it helps me look at my own world in a little bit different way and understand. It also helps me understand my ancestors who had different, obviously very different beliefs than I have. I mean, it's kind of surprising how you don't really have to go that far back to find ancestors who who weren't Christian. Or who were Christian, but it was a Christianity that was mixed with earlier pagan beliefs in a big way, you know, more than say my modern day Protestantism is. So, you know, sometimes learning about other people's faiths will give you a little insight into maybe what your own ancestors believe, not precisely, of course, but sometimes it kind of helps you. Build a bridge there between your way of thinking and the way that your ancestors thought. So, you know, I find all religions just incredibly fascinating and interesting. I always find things to admire there. I was just using, you know, the Japanese Shinto beliefs as an example, but like Buddhism, when I studied that in college, because when I was in college, we had to take, you know, it was a liberal arts degree. So, you know, you have a lot of electives and you have to whatever. And I took Western civilizations because that's something that the University of Iowa offered and lots of people took it. And I wanted to know, you know, more about Western civilization, warts and all. But after taking Western Civ, I thought, well, why isn't there a Eastern Civ class or a class about, you know, various countries in Africa? I mean, there didn't seem to be anything offered to give insight into other cultural stuff. I mean, the reason they offered Western Civ, obviously, is because just about every class you took at the University of Iowa, whatever it was, if it was art, drama, chemistry, astronomy, mathematics, the very first class was going to talk about the Greeks. You know, the Greeks originated our discipline or whatever. And so, you know, Western Civ was supposed to help students sort of
figure out who those Greeks were.
Yeah. And basically all this stuff, because when I was going to school in the late 80s anyway, just about every class wasn't just about the subject. It was historically situating the subject within a specifically Western tradition. I mean, I don't think any science classes ever even mentioned the contributions of the Arab world to philosophy or mathematics or science or anything. I don't remember a single science class I took that went back to, you know, Aristotle and Plato and all of this stuff. I don't remember a single one that mentioned, you know, during the medieval period, some of the contributions to natural philosophy and science of the Arab world at all, which is a huge oversight, you know, and I mean, a scandalous oversight, really. But that's just how education, all the liberal arts education was back then. So it was kind of hard to find anything that wasn't really focused on Western culture and basically claiming that all the stuff we have today is from Western culture. So I went out of my way to find classes that did teach about the history of, you know, China, Japan, Eastern religions and things like that. So, you know, one of the Eastern religions classes I took talked about Buddhism. And I knew a little bit about Buddhism before, but it was just so much more, so fascinating and different ways that it's practiced in different places. You know, I got to understand Zen and a lot of versions of Zen, Taoism. And I guess I really respect Taoism quite a bit.
I also am a big fan of Taoism.
I mean, just really everything about it. The general approach of, you know, well, the way, right? That the universe is kind of evolves along a certain path, and understanding that path and trying in your life not to get in the way of it, but to try to go with it, but not in a way that you don't have a say or that you don't have any agency, because certainly you can go against it. Obviously, that's not good for you or anybody else, but you know, a lot of the philosophy and a lot of the Taoist literature is just really inspiring and wise. I mean, some of the best wisdom literature, in my opinion, is from Taoist traditions. But there's a lot of good wisdom literature out there. I mean, I would encourage all people. If you're a Christian and, you know, you get a lot of inspiration from the Bible, that's great. But, you know, there are a lot of other wisdom traditions out there that I think you can gain a lot of inspiration and insight from. And I encourage people to do those explorations. But yeah, I guess now that I'm talking about it and thinking about it, probably, I don't know if Taoism really qualifies as does it qualify as a religion, or is it more of a philosophy?
I mean, there are certain people who that's definitely their religion is Taoism. So
I think
there is that is not a very yes or no question, but there are definitely people who would identify their faith as Taoism. All right. So I need someone listening. So Azure Talon, I guess. To go back and take the full length of that, what, like 12 minutes or so, transcribe that whole speech because I have plans for it. First of all, I think out in isolation, it makes a hell of a TED Talk. But also, there's just a lot of phases. I think we should explore it as an interpretive monologue to be used in drama classes or auditions. Because, like, I would love to see that, but, like, you're angry or, like, you do it but very gregariously. Like, you bump into somebody at a party and this is what you say. Like, I see a lot of flexibility in this speech. I like it. I want to see more of it. I want to monetize it. So.
All right, then.
It was quite the adventure. I do remember in my school, the religious studies classes had like individual ones on certain religions, and then it had one that was just Eastern religions. And I was like, we don't have enough to fill.
Yeah, let's just know,
all the but
yeah. just Eastern in one bucket. Dang. Wow.
Past this line, it's all there.
Hinduism and Buddhism, then you're done.
I think we had a paragraph on Taoism. So some of you already know this, but just to give the quick version, grew up in the 80s in a small town or a suburb of a city, as a white boy. Just kind of assumed I was Christian because aren't we all Christian? But I didn't go to church at all. And then in about seventh grade was like, holy shit, am I Christian? I don't think I'm Christian. What does it mean to be Christian? Yeah, I'm not sure I'm that. So then I decided to go look for things and eventually settled on Buddhism.
Oh, you did?
For about a year and a half in junior high. The least Buddhist time of your life.
You have told the story before. Now I remember. Yes.
But I was a Buddhist for a while. And then I realized while the paradigm made sense to me, the sort of end goal and the behavioral path outlined by Buddhism was not necessarily something I agreed with. Later in life, I did get introduced to Taoism, and I like it. In my head, Taoism is essentially Buddhism, but going like, but unclench a little bit, guys. Like,
I mean, maybe, yeah.
You
I
can know, see that. Just be, let's be cool about this. I agree with what you're saying, but I mean, there's work and there's play. Come on, just relax. That's how I feel about Taoism. But so Buddhist for about a year and a half, and then got out of that and spent most of my teens as a solid agnostic. Went to college, accidentally became a Wiccan, and was a Wiccan for a very long time. And now I'm an atheist. I love other religions. I find them fascinating. There is always something to learn from all of them. If you find a religion and you read it and you're like you read the basic tenets and you're like, there's nothing here that anybody would ever want to express in real life, you're reading a fake religion from a horror movie. Like, that's not a thing. But, and this might sound weird to people, I like learning about religions because religions are stories, and I love stories. And, I mean, obviously I have beliefs and other people have beliefs about things, but I don't even think that factors in to which of these stories is true and which of these stories is not true and all of that. That's not really what interests me, because you can learn a lot from stories and it doesn't have to be this actually happened. It can be a fable, it can be an allegory, it can be just a good idea somebody had. And so there's all sorts to get from it, and some really cool stories come out of religion.
Oh yeah. Well, and I started college as a religion major, and I probably should have double majored. I probably should have continued. I mean, I was only a couple classes short of a minor, actually, but religion has always fascinated me a great deal. I'm probably rank among my favorite stories, any religious or mythic stuff. Just fascinates me completely.
That and Labyrinth.
I feel that my observation is that existential concerns are a pretty big deal in people's lives. I know a lot of people don't think that, like, oh, the ordinary person doesn't think about these things at all. Well, maybe not consciously they don't, but if you really get to know a person and see the choices they make and the things they prioritize and the things they value and the things they're devoted to, you can see that, you know, all of this stuff is rooted in how they personally answer the big questions in life. Yeah. And that's just something that's, I think, is important and to all human beings, always has been and always will be. And I think if you really want to understand an individual or a group of people intimately, you understand the things they value the most, the things that are at the core of their motivations to do anything, to get up in the morning and go to work or whatever it is. And, you know, some of those narratives aren't just interesting and fascinating and even entertaining, but sometimes they're quite moving.
Yeah.
And they're very, they just really give you a powerful sense of what, to me, what humanity's about.
And that have been carefully considered, because I run into a lot of people who have spiritual and religious beliefs and then have never stopped to say, I wonder why I have this belief. But there are people who have, and someone who has genuinely looked at themselves and looked at why they feel the way they do about things and still has genuine faith in anything is amazing to me. Like, blind faith does not interest me, except again as a plot convenience in a horror movie. But people who are like, no, these are my beliefs, and I have looked at myself and been like, why do you believe this? What? And after that, still has faith. I'm very impressed. As somebody who used to have faith in things, that sounds more of a doubt. As somebody who used to have a sense of religious faith, and does not anymore, I appreciate that. But it's you know, the life unexamined is not worth living, and the faith not examined is not worth believing in.
That's what I think too. I mean, I used to, like, one time I was, I don't remember where I was, but I was with other I was Seventh-day Adventist at the time, and I was with other Seventh-day Adventists, and I think I had that there's a book you can get that's like a collection of essays from Bertrand Russell against religion, and some of it specifically against Christianity. And I think I had that book when I was reading it, and a fellow Seventh-day Adventist said, how can you read that? I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, well, I would feel seriously, you know, my faith would be seriously challenged by reading that stuff. I said, well,
don't you want to find that out?
Yeah, that's exactly what I said. It's like, well, don't you want to work through that, or maybe find out maybe you don't believe what you thought you did? I mean,
this is a thing that's been weighing on my mind recently. I don't know why, but my brain is broken, as we all know. And one of the things that happens is I frequently have either past or completely made up arguments in my head with people. And political arguments, religious arguments, all sorts of things, often with people in my life tangentially who like I know have different beliefs, and I would never actually want to argue with it, but in my head there's a power fantasy where I successfully argue with them out of whatever beliefs I don't like. But when my brain does this, just daydreaming, something has come up a lot recently, and that I think is an important step we need to have when we are arguing with people who have what seem to be wholly fundamentally different beliefs than us. And I thought about this a lot, particularly in conspiracy theory level, so flat earthers and things like that. And here's my question. So you have some belief, and I have a counter belief, and you don't think mine's right, you think yours is. The question is, if hypothetically I was right and you were wrong, and it's definitively provable, would you want to know? I think that is a very important question everyone needs to ask themselves before they get involved in debate over this kind of thing. Because I think there are a lot of people who ultimately are like, yeah, no, the queers are ruining the soil or whatever. And if it's like, if I could prove to you that is absolute bullshit, would you actually want to know that information? Or would you rather be more comfortable spending the rest of your life believing this?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of times it's perfectly obvious that,
and I think most people would deny it. They'd say, of course I want to know, because I want to know, but I don't think it's there. And I can even catch myself every once in a while being like, oh, I'm going to fucking hate it if it turns out this is not true. Like, things about, like, you know, what if tomorrow it was demonstrably proven that climate change was bullshit? Like, would I want to, like, I would want to know, but part of me is like, God, I would feel like such an ass, and I would be so confused, and I would be so torn by the idea that, like, I could be so certain of something and just be so wrong for such a long period of time.
I mean, I'm used like, to
that does so. Suck. That does suck. And I think it gives some sympathy to things. And it also knows up front, because if the person wouldn't want to know the truth, well, then let's not argue, because it's not going to be fun for one of us for sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, when it comes, you know, I am a theist and have been my whole life. I don't know if I will be my whole life, but I mean, by now it seems pretty.
He's just been theizing all over the place.
And, you know, I'd say I'm even a Christian, although that's a tricky thing to say for a variety of reasons. I've got one set of friends who have a lot of bad feelings about Christians for reasons that I understand. So it's like, maybe that's not the word I should use. But I've got a whole other group of people who are themselves Christians,
yes.
But I'm not Christian like they are.
Yeah.
So, like,
but
from both
this
sides.
This is big.
Like,
I've had discussions with people now who conflate two things that I believe are true. People can have faith, and that can be cool and fine and good. And a lot of people throughout history and in modern society have used faith as an excuse to do terrible things to people, and continue to all the time. Well, in very large numbers.
Yeah,
but again, not the same as faith equal bad.
But I would argue that that's true for a lot of other things. A lot of people exploit politics and political views and some all kinds of other philosophical things that they say, oh, I'm doing this because this is what this philosophical
but politics aren't a handy thing that we can be like, we should abolish politics. It's like, no, it's a thing.
Well, we can say we should.
It means a lot of people are like, religion is awful in any form, in any context. It's awful.
Like, I mean, yeah, I guess that's
no,
true.
You're right that it often has been and even often still is, but it's not intrinsic to the nature of faith.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, and so a lot of labels when it comes to religion I don't feel like really apply to me. I hesitate even to say that because you know, you run into a lot of people that will use the cliche, oh, I hate labels, and you kind of roll your eyes. It's like, you definitely
those
fit.
Posers.
There are definitely labels I could name that fit you and fit me. And I don't have a problem with labels myself, being labeled something. But I just don't know really what the labels appropriately are when it comes to religion. Because when it comes to religion, especially, people really do care about those labels. Like, you know, the label has to mean one thing, which of course it doesn't. And so, yeah, it's hard to find a religious label that
it's enough to make some people lose their mind and write the Principia Discordia.
But I've never had a problem reading things that challenge some aspect of my belief system. It's like, because I've always thought, well, if there's any truth to what I believe, then it should be able to withstand this criticism. And if it can't, well, then I should change what I believe. I mean, that just has always seemed pretty obvious to me. Now, not that it would be easy, but I have known a lot of people who have noticed this about me and who have asked about it out of concern, you know, that they couldn't or wouldn't do the same, or that it might harm me to be that kind of a curious person, I guess.
Yeah, but the devil is in all this news and information.
Well, so that's the thing.
Unlike true. William, too cool for school, humble brag right over here, I will say that I am not always like this, and I often am found myself digging my feet in just because I don't want to be wrong, even if it turns out that's the case. But I do agree with William that is the ideal to aspire to, and I try and do that regularly. You should never be afraid of the truth. And if you are, that says something about your beliefs.
But I also think that, I mean, probably one of the reasons I'm not particularly afraid of being proven wrong is because I'm wrong all the time. I mean, I'm constantly having to go, oh, yeah,
and I should say,
that's wrong.
I'm not at all worried about you being wrong. That never concerns me. If somebody's like, if it turned out William was wrong about this, would you want to know? I'd be like, yeah. So I can make fun of him for it. Remember that time you believe that thing?
I don't.
But if it's my beliefs, I and again, I 100% agree that this is the aspirational goal and it is what I try and work for. But every once in a while, I'll be like, okay, I've been arguing about this for a while. Am I just sort of defensive because I'm worried I might be wrong?
Maybe you're just not wrong as often as I am.
I mean, I don't think I could be. I mean, when Wayne Gretzky said the thing about you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, like that really resonated with William. And also William managed to somehow, in defiance of all mathematics, prove him wrong. Because somehow William takes every shot he can to have an opinion on something. And so far he has been wrong 102%
of the time. Yeah,
like he was. There are opinions he doesn't even have that he was somehow still wrong about. So I mean, now that I say it out loud, it makes sense that you would have this philosophy. Yeah, no. If I was you, I also would be fine with being wrong, because what's the alternative?
Yes, do you see what I'm saying?
It's like, if we're going to move forward and have a goddamn life, we're going to have to come to grips with the fact that we are never right.
Never right. No. Nope.
Despite the ironic last name.
Yeah, that's the doom of my life. Oh man, that's
and
good.
I'm sure you didn't know this because you'd be wrong, but we are past time here. We should go again. I feel like shit, so I would love to lay down. Thank you for joining us for this, the most mucusy episode of the hat so far. Go to the blog and tell us your thoughts on all of this stuff. I know some people who listen do have specific faiths. I know some people dabble. I know some people else are atheists like me. We've got an interesting group here. Tell us your feelings on religion and how it has impacted you and what you think about it. And tell us about more times William is wrong. You've got to know some. Just go through our back catalog, isn't there? Or this episode. At any point did William express a belief or an opinion? You can bank on it. It's wrong.
Oh man.
He's never right. Am I gonna spell it W-R-I-G-H-T or R-I? Probably. Okay. Also go to aethertheater.com and see all of the things William has made in his belief that they were good things. Mock him for them. Appreciate the entire site, ironically. Also go to smashwords.com and buy my book for $3. It's called Odd Wings. And there's a sequel gonna happen. So don't you want to know how it starts?
You do.
You can't want to know how it ends until you know how it starts. So can't argue with that. Can I do a pull quote from myself on the back cover of a book?
I don't know why not.
Anthony Parsons, author of this book, says, "You can't want to know how it ends until you know how it starts."
You don't see the ending of 100% of the books you don't read, I guess.
Ah! Wayne Gretzky's librarian said, Wayne Gretzky's much aggrieved seventh grade English teacher said this. She said it first.
Yeah, then he
and he it. Stole it, and his is the one everybody knows. He's like,
yeah,
that's true, Mrs. Blanchard, and it's also true about hockey. Okay, I'm being reminded of when I talk to my nephew next door, and I get him laughing so hard, I'm genuinely worried he can't breathe. So I feel like I should stop here, or you're gonna hurt that new heart valve.
Yeah, don't want to hurt it,
but. Join us next week. We'll do this again. Hopefully I'll be feeling better. And we'll find out what new things William is wrong about. He collects a lot over the week. So.
Yeah.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.